where we came from, where we've been. They're eternal questions that say a lot about where we're going as the human race. Welcome to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. Welcome to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. I am Jim Harold. So glad to be with you once again. And many times when we talk about ancient mysteries, we kind of travel the world. We talk about Egypt and Africa and different continents and so forth. We don't talk about North America quite as much, but we're going to do that today. And a book with a very compelling title, Cherokee Little People Were Real. And our guest today is Mary A. Joy. She is the author of it. And early in her career, she taught in an experimental, non-graded inner-city school and later worked for the world's largest private printing company, a major metropolitan air pollution control agency. She's worked for political campaigns and a community college. When you talk about two major metropolitan area newspapers, as a writer, columnist, artist, editor. And she's also written magazine articles and four books. And today we're going to talk about this one book. I believe it's still four. If it's more, please correct me. But we're going to talk about this one, Cherokee Little People Were Real. Mary Joyce, welcome to the program today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on your brand new show.
Now, you have done a lot of things. How did you get into this particular area of research? Because it seems a little far afield from some of those other things I read off. How did you get involved in this line of work?
Simple answer is I have a huge curiosity. The more realistic answer is that when I moved to North Carolina in 1998, I started hearing about these little people. And at first I just thought it was, just mythology and things like that. And then I talked to a man. His name was Walter Middleton, highly respected man in this area. Has written books himself and was a World War II hero and a pastor. And he said, no, there really were little people. And I paid a lot of attention to him. And he eventually connected me to other old-timers in the area. And one day I realized when I started checking into it that nobody had recorded this information. I couldn't find it anywhere. And so I just felt it was my duty to preserve the information. And originally, I just transcribed interviews back in 2001. I'm glad that I did it because most of those people had passed away since then. And then this, almost a year ago, I decided it really needed to be in real book form. And I went and took photos, I got lots of maps, I interviewed more people, and put it into what I call a real book rather than just the transcripts.
And tell us about the geographic area that we're talking about.
Okay, I live in Western North Carolina. Most of the remains of the little people that I talk about in the book were found in and around Western Carolina University, which is in Cullowhee. Now, most people in other parts of the country have never heard of Cullowhee. It would probably be about a 45, 50-minute ride from Asheville, which most people would know where that is.
Yes. In fact, my good friend Micah Hanks, who I have done podcasts with, he's from Asheville, so very familiar with at least where Asheville is, yes?
Right, so we would be further west of there.
So what is the evidence for these Cherokee little people? And again, I mean, the way you phrased it, we don't mean any disrespect by saying little people. They were literally little people. How were they discovered?
When they started doing construction projects where the university is now, just about every time they would do some kind of digging, they would find skeletons, they would find little bones, they would find little tunnels. And it seems like there was like a city beneath the ground right in this area. Now, this is not the only area where there are little people, but I focused on this area because it's on the university land. Credible witnesses reported on it, and it seemed to be such a vast network. These little tunnels were just discovered going every which way. There was two what they called Indian mounds on the campus. Mm-hmm. And the bigger one, the old-timer said, used to have a tunnel-like hole that went straight down vertically into the tunnel or into the mound. And this certainly is not typical of an Indian mound. And then later, as they began to do construction and tearing up the ground, they found all these little tunnels, and they would connect to this pile of dirt. Now, I say pile of dirt because the old-timers said that's what it was. It wasn't a real Indian mound. When these tunnels were dug out, they simply piled up the dirt from the tunnels.
Now, the skeptic might say, well, little bones, little skeletons, children. Why do you feel that's not the case?
All right. The best example of that is they found a child-sized skeleton. Since then, I've heard that there are other ones that have been found, too. But at the time, I only knew about one of them. And for a long time, one of the science professors kept this little skull on his desk, sort of like a decorative paperweight. And he always said it was a child's skull that was found at the mound. And one day, a high school English teacher came by his office. I don't know why, but she picked up this little skull and looked at it real closely. And she said, "This is not a child's skull. It has all its wisdom teeth." So that is, you know, one piece of evidence besides just being small bones.
Now, where are these bones now? Do we know their location?
Let me explain a little bit of the politics behind the scenes on
sure.
this. This is on a university where all the administrations have been focused on building more buildings. You probably know that if they find some kind of an ancient find, they have to stop construction and
right.
have archaeologists come in. Well, generally don't want this done. And so this has always been kind of hush-hush. Some of the, one of the anthropology students, a graduate, said that some of those are kept in the forensics lab at the campus, but they don't talk about it. And not only that, but they supposedly have at least two giant skeletons in that same lab. And the giants have six toes.
And, wow.
Yeah, I know. This is really a fascinating area to live in. There are so many mysteries. We have Bigfoot. We have little people. We have, you know, giants. It's just really quite incredible. Plus, we have UFOs.
The people who discovered this, the workers and so forth, what kind of people were they? Tell us a little bit about them.
Okay. When it was, there's one building on campus. It's called the McKee Building, and it's kind of the hub for an awful lot of this. And when it was first built back in the late 1930s, when they were cutting into what they thought was virgin land, they found two of these little tunnels going to the east of that building. In the late 1940s, let's say roughly 10 years later, they decided to build a basement beneath the McKee Building. Now, you can do things like that here in the mountains. So from the front of the building, it's two stories, and from the back of the building, it's three stories. And when they did the second construction, they found three little tunnels going in the opposite direction. So that's really how it started. And there's irony in all this. When I decided to make this into a real, what I call a real book, I met with the head of facility. Oh, he has one of these awful long titles. The director of facilities and construction and that mm-hmm. kind of campus. And he said, yes, he said, they know about the little tunnels at McKee. He said, there's two of them that are still left. But because the basement was built later, they had to go back in 2000 and put in a new supporting wall. So now these tunnels are hidden behind this new supporting wall. And on the other side of the wall is the anthropology department. And it's so ironic.
Yeah, it is. And so I'm assuming that no archaeologists or anything have really been able to look at this material, at least outside of the ones of the college.
Only it's the workers. It's the men that put in the sewer lines. It's the men who, you know, leveled off mountains for parking areas. When they put in the stadium, it was more construction workers who found it. And it's just the working people who have discovered these things. And the academics, for whatever reason, are curtailed from pursuing it.
Is there anything in the Native American tradition, the oral tradition, or maybe something on artifacts, Native Americans of the area? Because you mentioned they're Cherokee, so I'm assuming that you came to that conclusion because Cherokee were in the area. That's my assumption. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Is there anything in the oral tradition or in artifacts that would further bolster this in addition to the discovery of the little bodies and the little skeletons and the small tunnels?
The Cherokee were not originally from the mountains of Western North Carolina.
Okay.
They come from the Great Lakes region. When they arrived here, they found these little gardens, but they didn't see any people. And eventually they saw these little people that would come out from underneath the ground and tend the gardens and then take the food back under the ground. The Cherokee called them the moon people because they came out at night. And you may have heard of Dr. Artie Sixkiller.
Oh, yes, she's been a guest a couple of times on the shows, yeah.
Right. She's one of the ones who did some extensive research on that aspect of the little people. Now, what's confusing in this area is you get descriptions of three different kinds of little people. The ones that Dr. Clark talked about were described as being blue-skinned and big eyes and living under the ground. The most common description of little Cherokee people are ones that look like the Cherokee, except they're smaller. They're like 3.5 feet tall. And I have talked to some of the more well-respected people on the campus, including the most revered elder, who is now well into his 80s. And they say they still see the little people in remote areas of the reservation.
Wow.
The reservation is, it'd probably take you maybe 35 minutes to get from the university to the campus, to the reservation. And so it's all still a pretty tight area. And some of the people put out food for the little people on a regular basis, and they say that if they don't put it out there, they'll hear pebbles being thrown on the roof as if to remind them to put it out. So that there's many Cherokee who say there are still some living. And it's not such a preposterous idea, because I've interviewed five people for the website that I do, which is called skyshipsovercachers.com, and who've seen the Bigfoot in this area. Now, if the Bigfoot can remain elusive, it certainly would be much easier for little people to remain elusive.
So it sounds like these were little people. They were subterranean dwellers. So I asked slightly differently, but I'll ask this way. Any evidence of any artifacts left by the little people?
Oh, all right, let me jump. There's really a third description of the little people.
Oh, yes, go ahead.
And they said that the third kind really looks more like a leprechaun. Now, this answers your question about an artifact. In 1940, there was one of these historic floods in the area, the kind that's devastating, the kind
right.
that just wipes everything out. And this one boy, who at the time was five, found what he called a lead head, and it was an oval-shaped metal medallion-type thing that got washed up from behind a Methodist church along the river south of the campus. And there is truly a face on it. It looks quite a bit like a leprechaun, with the Spock ears and the pointed nose. And the man is still living. He doesn't want anybody to have access to his little medallion. I was able to get a photograph of it. And what's interesting is it was molded. And you can see seam around the edge of it, and there is a leprechaun-like face on each side of this medallion. The man says nobody's been able to identify the type of metal that it's made out of since he was a boy. He's called it the lead head just because it's so heavy. And I have a picture of it in the book, and have a picture of a leprechaun's profile right next to it, so you can really see the similarity. Now, let me do another jump. The Cherokee said there was a type of little people that they didn't like, and they wanted to kill them off. And these were the ones that they said had red hair or red whiskers and squinty eyes And for whatever reason, the Cherokee didn't like them, and they actually tried to kill them off. Now, this ties together with a wonderful moonshine story. There were two moonshiners. I think one was called Jim Woodring, and the other one was Alec, and he went by the name of Lick. And back in the 30s, during Prohibition, they built a moonshine still way off the beaten track on the top of a mountain called Cullowhee Mountain. And when they were digging their moonshine site, they found a pile of these little bones, little people bones. And when you take that piece of information and tie it together with the Cherokee not liking the ones with the red hair, you wonder if those were some that had been killed off. I mean, there's no way we're going to know the answer, but it is thought-provoking.
So what kind of really convinced you, what was the clincher for you that this was a real thing?
Probably, things like the little skull, mm-hmm. things like seeing the actual medallion and then going back and finding out, you know, the extent of the flooding damage at that time. The sheer integrity of the people that I interviewed. I interviewed a total of 11 people for the book. Now, there's other chapters in there. It's not just those interviews. But each one of them was such a just down-to-earth, basic person and very trustworthy. I mean, they would do things like be a house painter in the daytime and be a volunteer fireman. They were just really nice people and had no reason to make up these kind of stories. And to the day they died, they had, no benefits from it.
Yeah. So, it's one of those things where people don't have a, what's the word I'm looking for? They don't have a vested interest. Yeah. Financial right. interest or otherwise. Those stories sometimes are the most fascinating things.
Now it's interesting. Whenever you put out a book, you begin to hear responses from people. And one man contacted me who had been a student at Western in right around 2000. And he and a bunch of buddies were down by the river one day just goofing off. And they said the head of security came by and they started a conversation. And this particular former student asked him, "Oh, what are you doing so far off campus?" And the man had a box. It was, you know, a little bit bigger, but similar to a shoebox. And he said, every time we do construction on that campus, we find more of these little bones. And he takes, you know, he told the boys he took them off to the ATV trail to bury them, and because they didn't want the construction projects to stop. So that's one example of confirmation I've gotten since then. I was also contacted by a man who's in the construction business and is fairly well known in this area. And he was doing a construction project, within 5 miles of the campus. And he was cutting into the side of a mountain so they could create like a ledge that you could build on. And they found, I think he said, 5 little tunnels. And he described them, which fairly well. And they're always in red clay, that real dense red clay. And they are square cut on the sides and on the bottom with a rounded top. And if you know anything about engineering, the rounded top reinforces and makes the tunnel stronger. And he noticed something that I hadn't heard from any of the other witnesses. He said there were like tool marks on the sides or on the walls of the tunnels where it looked like it had been used to, level out or make the walls smooth. He also said he was very surprised that when they cut into that land and looked into these tunnels, they looked just as fresh and new. There were no cobwebs. They were just pristine, he said. And they were too small for him to crawl into. He said the ones that he came upon were like maybe 2 feet across and maybe 3 feet high, something like that. And most of these guys around here are much too big to go crawling into those. So that's been some responses I've gotten from the book that have been kind of thought-provoking. Also, I really hope that some archaeologists will get a hold of this book. I've put maps in there. I've given exact locations. I've put in photos, hoping that somebody else will get in there with the expertise to really dig up and find some more information.
You know, it's interesting to me that you have photos in this book, so you have some things to point to. And you've mentioned some of the photos. Where are some of the other photos that you have?
Well, for example, just showing where these things are located. There's pictures of the flood where it washed out. There's pictures of a rock called Judith's Color Rock. It's one of the big mysteries around here. It's the largest petroglyph in this state. It's one of the biggest mysteries, unsolved mysteries, in the country. What's been carved on this large rock, nobody else has been able to decipher it, including the Cherokee. So this predates the Cherokee. The little people predate the Cherokee. So there was an overlap of the two cultures. So perhaps the little people did this rock. To add to the mystery, it's called Judicolor Rock, and that's the English way of pronouncing it. I can't do it in Cherokee. But it's named after a giant that could, you know, easily hop across the mountains. And it's in the same area where I've gotten some of the Bigfoot stories. So my own thought is perhaps Judicolor Giant was inspired by a Bigfoot. Just another thought-provoking idea.
So do you tend to think, and I've always been interested about this, we do a range of paranormal shows, everything from UFOs to ghosts and cryptozoology and all of those different kind of things. And when I first started 10 years ago doing these programs, I used to think, okay, well, UFOs are in this category, cryptids are in that category, ghosts are in that category, and they're not interrelated in any way. Do you think all of these kind of Freudian strange things in your particular area of the world are somehow connected?
I think we have to totally be open to that. One of the people that I interviewed, in fact, the last interview that's in the book, was with a woman by the name of Ruth Beck, and I only knew her by that name when I interviewed her. When I went to find a photo of her to add it to, you know, to the new book, mm-hmm. I came across her obituary, and she was the great-great-granddaughter of Solly, who was the hero of the Cherokee in this area. And she said that the little people came from the stars. And, of course, the Cherokee also believed they originated from the Pleiades. Mm-hmm. So it's something in this area, in this culture, that supports the idea that life, at least some forms of life, have originated from the stars. And so that's certainly a possibility. I know that many times the Bigfoot sightings have also been where there's been a UFO up in the sky. So who knows? There may be a connection between the two. With the dolphins, do you know Joan Ocean?
I've heard the name, but I don't know her now.
She is the best-known dolphin expert. She lives in Hawaii. And she says that there is complete interaction between the dolphins and the UFOs, some of which will actually go under the water, and they will interact with the dolphins. So, yeah, I think there is a connection. Whether there is a connection in every instance, I wouldn't dare say that. But there certainly is a strong possibility that there is that connection.
It is something really to ponder. Where can people find out more about all the work you do? I know you have that. I know you have that blog that you do, and also your book. Where can somebody plug into all of that?
Okay. As far as the book goes, the easiest way to get that is on Amazon. And the book, again, is Cherokee Little People Were Real. The website that we do is called Sky Ships Over Cachers. And we started that back in 2008 because of significant UFO sightings in the area. But it's grown into so much more than that. We deal with a lot of cutting-edge topics. We have one section just on ETs, Bigfoot, and other beings. We have things on UFOs, both in the local area, but we also get into some fantastic things that go on around the sun, which there's a man that contacted us from the Netherlands, and he is a photographic computer expert, and he has taken NASA photos of giant objects around the sun, and he's been able to, what he calls, dust and clean them so you can, you know, see things better.
Mm-hmm.
And the structures of these objects around the sun are bigger than Jupiter and have real structure to them. Some of them, you know, almost make you think of a giant cruise ship because you can see the mechanical vertical lines throughout the whole thing. And we have those kind of things under global links. And so we've got those giant motherships that are way out there by the sun. We have a huge variety of UFOs that have been seen in this immediate area. And they aren't all the same. You know, they can be quite different. Some of them almost look like giant organic things in the sky. Some of them look like conventional UFOs. The very first one was quite conventional, and it was taken by an 8-year-old child. The night before, her mother had seen a big light in their backyard when she got up to get a midnight snack, and she thought it was the moon, but thought it was too bright for the moon. And when she went out, there was a UFO hovering over her yard. And, of course, the next day, she's talking about it. So the child had her cell phone camera, and when they went to the grocery store, the 8-year-old was out there snapping pictures of the sky. Didn't see anything, but when they got back to their house, right smack in the middle of the sun, you could see what I call a stereotypical UFO smack in the middle of the sun. And that really was the inspiration for us to start taking this more seriously in this area. And Cashiers, by the way, is a mountaintop community that would be south of Western's campus, probably about 20 minutes from there. And there's been just a ton of sightings in that area.
Well, once again, we certainly appreciate it. It is a really interesting thing, particularly when we look at North American ancient mysteries. As I said at the beginning of the program, I think we're very apt to kind of focus in on things in Egypt and Africa and possibly Europe, but sometimes we forget there was ancient pre-European history on this continent, and some of it is quite interesting and somewhat, like this case, possibly strange and may change the way we think about all of this. Thank you for joining us today. We certainly appreciate it. And thank you for tuning in to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. I'm Jim Harold, and we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.